Hello again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. In for Ray Graff, I may say. We'll be discussing birds today on the program, and our wonderful Rich Guthrie is here to help answer your questions about them. A veteran birder, a former NCOM specialist and compiler of the Catskill, New York Christmas Bird Count for the National Audubon Society, Rich is our resident, absolute resident avian expert. The number to call is 1-800-348-2555. 1-800-348-2551. You can also comment, listen up now, on the Vox Pop page of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. Check in on Facebook at facebook.com/WAMC Radio or tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop. You know, Rich, I've always wanted to ask you about this business of social media. Here you are. Think about the irony of this. You are the resident bird expert. Nobody knows more about birds than you do. And into our lives comes this new thing called tweeting.
Yes.
Now, tweeting and tweets come from birds, don't they?
Birds tweet.
Birds tweet.
And now we have lots of folks out there tweeting along as they go.
And you'll remember Rockin' Robin goes tweet, tweet, tweet.
I do remember, actually.
Yeah, you remember that, right? Okay. So anyway, you better line up, folks, because there are only two free phones right now, and everybody loves the birds. Let's go to Ann in Pennsylvania. Ann, you're on.
Oh, hi. Thank you all so much for taking the call.
Sure.
My phoebes have a problem. For the last 4 or 5 years, they persist in nesting on the crossbeams in my dilapidated garage. And every year they lose either their clutches or their fledglings to some critter or snake. And this is despite my putting up barriers to whatever's getting to them. And it has totally stumped my neighbor and me. And I was wondering, do I remove the nest and keep removing the nest in order to keep them from going there? I mean, we are just lost, and I hate seeing all these baby birds being eaten by something.
Yeah. Well, I can't say as I blame you, but, you know, it's kind of hard to teach an old phoebe a new trick.
Well, what kills me is for 15 years, they came right above the light fixture on right off the house.
Is that a phoebe?
And 1 year, they up and decided to go to the garage, and they've never been safe since.
They are good-looking birds.
Well, phoebes are wonderful little guys. They're flycatchers, you know.
And, I know. I love them. That's why it breaks my heart.
Yeah.
I keep meaning to call in and ask, what do I do?
Well, I suppose the first thing to do is see if you can identify who the culprit is.
We have worked so hard at that, but it's getting in there at night.
No, yeah. Television camera. They're cheap. They are these days. You can get a television camera, aim it right up there, put a little light on.
And you'll probably find out that it's a raccoon or a skunk or perhaps a neighbor cat or something like that.
Oh.
You know, there are plenty of predators out there. And phoebes are very vulnerable in that. The good thing about them is that they have the ability to reconstruct a nest. And
I've seen it.
Yes, right. And let me see, a couple of inventive ways of enclosing them. Once the nest is built, they have a very strong connection with the nest. The instincts have them to keep trying to protect or take care of the eggs and young. So perhaps an enclosure that around the nest would work. Moving the nest probably wouldn't work.
And well, that's why I was calling now before they arrive. And I was thinking, if I remove the nest now,
get the
before
TV?
They get here, you're saying no.
Well, what you could do is try to do is block the access to where they are nesting. Either put some mesh over it or burlap.
Right.
And then they'll have to find another place other than there to build a nest.
But that doesn't mean
good.
The raccoons
so
won't get
that's
them
okay
there.
By you. Okay.
Yes, right. Yeah, they love that spot. Phoebes are very fond of building around houses on lamp
fixtures. Oh, I know.
Fixtures.
I love them. I missed them when they moved from the lantern, above the lantern, to the garage, and that's when all the trouble started.
Oh. Well, now see if you can discourage them from building in the first place.
Yeah. And I can do that.
But once they do build, first of all, you know, the law protects them against and protects them against themselves. You know, it's illegal to mess with a nest.
Okay, and enough about the Phoebes. We'll talk to you again soon, I hope.
Well, I really appreciate your help. Okay.
Well, good luck with it, Anne, and thanks for caring. Phoebes are great. Yeah. And they're one of the first harbingers of spring.
I know. That's why I wanted to get on the phone call so fast. Yeah.
Good for you, yes.
Thank Where do you. They come from?
They spend the winter just to the south of us. Many of our songbirds and flycatchers included spend the winter in South or Central America or the Caribbean Islands.
Yeah, yeah.
These guys spend the winter someplace in New Jersey. Life is good.
New Jersey?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or well, Carolinas or Florida or Georgia. Yeah. They come back with an accent.
Yeah. Well, oh yeah, y'all. Yeah. Okay. Did you ever go out with a girl named Phoebe?
Negative.
Negative. Mm-hmm. Okay. let's go to Gina in Rhinebeck. Gina, you're on.
Hi, Rich. I appreciate all the work you do, and I want to give a shout out to that Hudson Valley Almanac that I just signed on to, and I think it's really great.
Hey, good for you. And just to expand on that,
sure.
That's Tom Lake, my good friend from the Department of Environmental Conservation. He keeps observer donated material that come in via the internet to Tom Lake at the Hudson River Almanac, and he compiles it and creates this this journal that anybody can have access to, things that are happening out on the Hudson River, from fish to birds to insects to flowers to trees.
So you can go there and just see all these pictures of
it's
these
great.
Things?
It's great.
You'll see all the comments.
And what is it again?
Hudson River Almanac.
.com?
Dot something.
Yeah, dot something. Okay.
Yeah. It's available. Google it. You'll find it.
Yeah. Okay, so
Hudson River Almanac.
Yeah, now you've done your shout-out. What else you got?
Okay, well, I've been riding down on the Hudson River to the city, and I've had the most incredible sightings of bald eagles. And some are very, very easy, with a big white head, and, you know, and they fly along the train. But the other ones, I'm confused on how to really differentiate when they're in the air from a hawk, because they don't look that big. They might be juveniles. But or do they go in groups of like 8 or 9? Is that possible?
It's always possible, but not likely. The best way to tell an eagle, a bald eagle, not the golden eagle, but the bald eagle at a distance, is they have this big flat barn door type flying barn door silhouette, big flat squarish shaped wing pattern. And even at a great distance, they look like just a horizontal bird flying out there.
And what about the other eagles?
Well, the other ones have a more rounded, a more bird-like wing shape to them.
Which are bigger?
Oh, the bald eagle is by far larger. But the golden eagle, and there are a few of them can be seen. There's a few of them hanging around by Storm King down in Hudson Valley. And can be seen in migration going through the area. And they look more like the red-tailed hawk with a more rounded wing and the taper that comes towards the inner part of the wing. So that flat, square, barn door appearance.
Okay, that's helpful. And one great thing, I went on a tour walk of Central Park yesterday, and we got to see the red pale male, the red-tailed hawk.
Central Park.
And his hair. They came out of their nest and flew around and went back to their nest.
And where is it?
Very exciting. It's on 72nd Street and Fifth Avenue. And if you're standing at the Hans Christian Andersen statue by the boat pond, and you look straight across Fifth Avenue, you're staring right at the building, and they're up at the top of the building.
There's a wonderful book written by Marie Wynne entitled Red Tails in Love. Red Tails in Love.
It's so great.
It is, and it's not only about the red-tailed hawks, but it's also about the people who like the red-tailed hawks.
Yeah.
It's a story, a commentary about the people who birdwatch around Central Park. Lovely
great
insights.
Great book. Well, I'll let you go because I know this is always a busy day, but thank you, and I'll work on my eagle spotting.
There you go. Thanks.
Thanks all. Bye.
You know, I was once visiting a folk singer friend of mine. I'm not going any further than that, but I think everybody knows. Round Beacon, you know what I mean?
Sure, of course.
And we looked out, and he showed me all the eagles that were flying around. That was something.
Yeah, the story of the eagle is a remarkable success story. And the credit goes to my good friends in environmental conservation, Pete Nye and Gene McCaffrey, who at the time were able to persuade the commissioner and the governor of New York and also the commissioners and governors of Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Alaska that it would be a good idea to bring eagles back to New York, basically by essentially kidnapping them from the nest out there.
How you do it?
Oh, there's... out west, there's been a surplus of eagles. In New York, they were biologically.
But how do they grab them?
Oh, they climb up into the nest. These guys are good. Baby eagles. And they were able to take them back to New York and release them in New York. And the eagles grew up thinking they grew up in New York. And so when they matured, they came home, and there they are nesting now. Wow. And their success is just phenomenal.
That's amazing.
How they are able to pull that off in the red tape and a bureaucracy between the states and federal government. But they knew what they were doing. They were very convincing about their plan.
Well, that's great. Hey, Rich, let's take Daisy's call, okay?
Okie doke.
Okay, and here comes Daisy in the Hudson Valley. Daisy, go.
Hi. Yeah, I'm actually calling about eagles as well. I've actually never seen them before, and I was out the other morning with my dogs, and we have a pond right below our house, and I heard the geese coming in, as they do at this time of year, on their way, and I heard this very odd cry, and I didn't really think, I thought maybe it was a swan or something, but I didn't see anything. And then later that afternoon, I was out walking my dogs again with a friend, and I saw this bird, and I thought, oh my God, it's an eagle. And it's still there. It's been there for a few days. And now I was just out a couple of hours ago, and there's a second one that seems larger. Are they going to build a nest? Or?
Yeah, that's a good chance that they are. And in fact, they probably already have.
Okay.
And again, that's a continuation of the success that that we're enjoying with the bald eagle in New York and New England and throughout the Northeast, as a matter of fact. And now they're actively nesting not only in the Hudson Valley, but in a lot of the peripheral areas out in Quabbin Reservoir, out in Massachusetts, and Lake Champlain and the St. Lawrence River, Delaware River Valley. They're just a remarkable story. And the sound that you heard could have been eagles can't keep a secret. They can't share the space without letting everybody know.
Hey, so, Daisy, thank you so much for the call. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks a lot.
We're about to
take
a break.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, we'll take a fast break. We'll be right back for Russ and Irene and John and everybody else.
Support comes from the Unitarian Universalist congregations of the Capital Region and beyond, where people with differing beliefs can worship together. CapitalRegionUU.org. Smith College Museum of Art, presenting Collecting Art of Asia, a four-part exhibition celebrating 100 years of Asian art at Smith from traditional to contemporary. Now on view, smith.edu/artmuseum. The Honest Wait Food Co-op in Albany, New York, offering local and organic produce, natural groceries, artisan cheeses, and more. honestweight.coop. Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services and a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years. boydenandperrin.com. And Café Le Perche, Hudson, New York, boulangerie, lounge, and bistro featuring European wine selections, dinner menu with bistro fare served nightly. cafeleperche.com.
Our wonderful Zachary has got us back here. With us, of course, is the phenomenal Patrick Donges, the assistant news director here at WAMC, a man we respect and love. Okay, Patrick, over to you.
Well, thank you, Alan. Robert on Facebook asks, the Cardinals came in numbers to our feeders a few weeks ago. Now they already seem to be pairing up. Seems early, is it? Also, a red-winged blackbird came to the feeder we've never seen outside of swampy areas. This seems odd. We are not near a swamp. Is that odd?
Well, it's not odd. Red-winged blackbirds are another one of these harbingers of spring. They're on their way back in migration, and they're opportunistic. If they see a free lunch, they'll go in for it. Mm. And I'm surprised that a few haven't noticed it before. Now, the cardinals are pairing off. They gather during the winter months, and I guess now that we have a pope elected, they can go their own way.
Yes.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So, but they are pairing off, and they become a little more territorial and won't tolerate the others in their selected little kingdom there, and off they go.
Which is why they come to your window, right? Because they're territorial. They see another one there.
That's right. You're right about that. They see their reflection in the window. They think it's another cardinal intruding on their domain, and they want to fend them off.
Mm-hmm. And which ones of those are the... are the boys are the colorful ones, right?
Yeah, the males are the brightly colored ones, and the females are the plain or cryptically patterned birds. And for good reason. They're the ones that have to sit on the nest and don't want to be seen back at the nest because, you know, the eggs and young would be vulnerable. So the guy, his job is to go out there and be conspicuous and to be seen and said, here I am. I'm your man. Come and get me.
Okay, Patrick, what do you got?
We got one more. Joe on Facebook asks, there was a barred owl sitting on our neighbor's lawn Saturday for a long time. Then it pounced and caught and ate something. Do they often hunt on the ground? Do you think the owl was okay? All the guides say they hunt from trees only. If it did fly to a tree and sit for another hour or so.
Well, the barred owl is one of the more unusual owls. You oftentimes will see them out during the daytime. And feeding on the ground is not all that unusual. The chances are he knew there was something down there, and he was just waiting for it to make a move.
Maybe rabbit or something?
Well, smaller than that, a mouse or a vole, something along those lines.
Yeah. Okay.
And he probably saw it or heard it. They have excellent hearing. They could hear these things rummaging around in the grass and leaves. And he went down there just waiting for this thing to pop its head out and said, that's it. Now, the barred owl is usually resident in this area. But this year we've had an influx of barred owls from the north, probably because of a food shortage up there. Yeah. And now those that made it through the winter will be working their way back up north, and they might be more apt to be seen during the daylight hours in the process.
Do they, all those barred owls, go to college down there in, Annandale? Or?
Well, the wise old owl, they got it somewhere.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank
all right.
you.
Thank you, Patrick. Let's go to these phones. Okay, Russ in Waterford. Okay, Russ, you're on. Hey, Russ.
Russ.
Oh, boy. See, Russ didn't think we were going to get to him. So
Russ probably walked over to the refrigerator.
He probably walked to or some other place.
Well,
and,
that could be. Well,
and now he's inconvenienced and he can't come out. Okay, Russ, 1, 2, 3, you're gone. Okay, let's go to Irene in Latham. Okay, Irene, you're on.
Hello. This is a hummingbird question. It's
probably
too early, but, it's never too early. I have been trying for years to attract hummingbirds on and off. I have a lot of bright-colored perennials around. I never use any pesticides or herbicides or anything. And I change the sugar water. I do everything right. And they never come. So I kind of gave up. I heard that you have to put out the feeders early enough. If they don't find it when they just migrate in, you're done.
No, that's not true. They'll roam around in a neighborhood and searching out feeding opportunities once they're around. So it's not a question of catching them as they're passing through.
Yeah.
All I can say is that there must be some other factor involved there because hummingbirds are not all that uncommon. They do like flowers, colorful flowers, and, of course, the hummingbird feeders. So I don't understand why they would not be coming to you, but the timing is not that critical. You just look at some of the late blooming flowers in the garden, and you'll see that some of them come up well into June
Absolutely.
And July, and hummingbirds will sooner or later find them.
And they'll go to your fuchsia.
They will.
What do you suggest? You know, I was watching there was just the other day on PBS, there was a documentary about their habitat, but their habit's just amazing. And they said that some of them live as long as like 12 years, and they also said that they like to come to the same places that they had come in the year before. So it seems like nobody found me years ago, and nobody comes. So anyway, I'm just kidding. But do you have any suggestions? Like maybe should I try to put out more than one feeder?
More than one won't hurt. It's a matter of them finding it. I would say just keep trying because there certainly should be in the area. And you're right about that. They do. Most birds come back to where they were born.
Yeah.
That's what worked with the eagles, and it works with hummingbirds. But there are always a few explorers or pioneers that will search out new areas. Mm-hmm. And so you have to hope that one of the offspring that return to a territory that's already occupied will search around and find your yard. And I can say just keep trying, and an additional feeder and certainly colorful flowers will make a could make a big difference. So
now, Rich, don't you have to also keep them clean, absolutely clean?
Well, you do.
Oh, I try to do it. Yeah, no, I follow all of this. I don't buy the colored syrup. I make my
own. Good for you. That's good for you.
Yeah,
and you know what you might do is try getting some red ribbon and putting that out there as sort of like a flagging to get their attention. Little strips of red ribbon that might get a passerby's attention.
Just like on the top of the pole?
On a pole or in a shrub or in a, you know, that might get their eye. And then once they make that spiral flight into your yard, bingo, they found you and they love you.
Irene, thank you very much. Let's go to John in Gloversville. John in Gloversville, okay.
Thank you. First, I'd like to ask, have you ever heard of a bird app that for a mobile device that you could take a picture of a bird and it actually would identify it?
No, not quite that sophisticated, but there are ones that have the birds already on pictures. That you can dial up a bird and look at the picture and see that's what you're looking at.
Yeah, some of them, the call sounds so real, it seems like they're right there.
Well, that works too, yes. And while you bring it up, I do want to mention eBird, a project of Cornell University, that is approachable via a bird app called BirdLog. Which is available for both iPhones and
Android-type
bases.
What's it called?
BirdLog.
Okay.
It's very inexpensive, and it's a very useful tool. That's what I use when I'm on the road. I you know, just click in a couple of keystrokes, and bingo, I've got Cornell now knows where I've seen a red-winged blackbird or a cardinal or a red-tailed hawk. And so does the rest of the world. That's the beauty of it. It's accessible to the world at large. In fact, I was just this morning, I was looking at eBird. I went to the eBird site at Cornell, eBird.org, as a matter of fact. And there's a little page on there. There's all sorts of opportunities to explore data. And there was a little page that has a light come on anytime somebody anywhere in the world submits a report.
Wow.
And it's like fireflies up and lighting up from all around North America and Central America, and also Europe and Asia and Australia. All these little blips come up. I think it's great.
Say that again. What's that?
eBird. eBird.org.
Hey, John, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Nice thing about eBird is it's free and easy to use.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go to Doug in Saratoga. Okay, Doug, you're on.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I was wondering, we have a cabin up in the north end of Lake Sacandaga.
Uh-huh.
And for the last two springs, we haven't been up there yet, but for the last two springs, there's been a pair of birds about the size of a sparrow. But what's unique about them is they hover very similar to a hummingbird.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, you know, they're pretty large to hover.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a lot of fun to watch. They sit on our clothesline and they do these 180s. You know, they sit on one side, then they hop to the other and hop back and hop back. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering what kind of bird that might be.
Okay, well, I'm going to take a wild guess that it's probably the Phoebe. We were talking about the Phoebe earlier, which is a flycatcher. And they're very sparrow-like in appearance, being brown and sparrow size, and that's what they do. They'll sit on a wire or clothesline, fence post, and fly out, catch a bug, fly back. 180.
Is that what flycatcher means?
Yes.
They catch flies?
They catch them on the wing.
Uh-huh.
Great fun to watch. And we have a whole bunch of different kinds of flycatchers that will be here in a month or so.
And the more the better, right? Because the more flycatchers, the less flies.
That's right.
Fewer flies.
The fewer
now,
flies.
Now, do they hover? Do Phoebes hover?
You know, if they miss the first time, they might take a hover on there. But not quite like the hummingbird that, no, nobody does it like the hummingbird. So I don't want to, let me see. There's also a couple of insects that will act like that, but it's probably not what you're seeing. They're much smaller. There's more hummingbird size. But I let's go with that and see what happens. Let me know back in July and August if that fits.
Well, I'm hoping they come back.
Oh, they will.
If I do, I'll try to get something on video.
Ah.
Because they actually stand in air, flapping their wings, and staying still. It's amazing. So I want to thank you so much.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to it, and I'll be glad to hear more about it come June and July. Well, let's keep checking it out.
Here we go.
I hope I have some news. Thank you so much.
Could be the well-known but rare helicopter bird.
The helio bird.
The helio bird.
Yes.
Let's go to Ralph in Saugerties. You're on, Ralph.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I originally from Brooklyn. I've been living in Saugerties for a while. I've been getting more, I notice more things every year. And last year I noticed I had to, do a little bit of a scat cleanup on my front steps.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder what it was like. It was like rodent like. And then I said, oh, it's got to be bats. And sure enough, in the eaves of, they're shutters. They're like phony shutters on the house. There were two gray bats sleeping there every day. And what? they seem to disappear at night, I guess, to go eat mosquitoes or whatever. And then they come back in the daytime.
Well, lucky you.
I agree. Now, the thing is, towards the end of the... I know there's the disease with the white nose.
Mm-hmm. White nose syndrome, yes. Devastating.
I'm worried about it because towards the end of the year, I don't know when they come back, but I'm waiting. And one question is, do they come back to the same place? And two, at the end, there was only one. I mean, they usually stay in pairs or threes or whatever. I mean, it seemed like one maybe succumbed or something.
Well, that could be, but it depends on the type of bat that it is. There's a lot of different species of bats, and each of them have their own behavioral patterns. So, first of all, I wasn't being facetious when I was saying lucky you, because to have a few bats around the neighborhood is, to me, a good thing. I'm glad you're in line with that. I like that. And the white nose syndrome is, as you point out, is a very devastating malady that's affecting the bat populations. It's been decimating their numbers. And I'd be honest with you, I don't know the latest on explorations, what the cause and cure might be. But I do hear that that in some areas there has been a comeback of some of the bat, especially the brown bat, the little brown bat, that is the one that might be most affected by the white nose, as well as the Indiana bat. But and those may be either isolated, haven't contracted the disease, or have a resistance, which is really what we're looking for, what we're hoping for, is that there be a immunity that some of the species, the individuals may develop and share it with the rest of their kin. So I can't tell you what the story is with the bats that you have there, other than keep an eye on them and let's hope for the best for them. But
so they might come back at any time.
They might, yes. They could be in the recesses of at eve of the house where they might be spending the winter hibernating.
That was my next question. Where do they usually, nearby, they find a place to hibernate?
Yeah, they would. Or some of the bats migrate away. They migrate south just like birds and spend the winter south of us and come back later on in the season.
Okay, so. Ralph, we got to let you go.
All right, thanks
a lot.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Let's go to Jim in Vermont. Jim, 1-800-348-2551. Go, Jim.
Hi, Rich. Hi, Alan.
Hey.
Great show. While I was waiting, I saw a bluebird in my dogwood tree, so this is super.
Never seen one.
Oh. We got to get out. If you want to see bluebirds, we'll make an arrangement to see bluebirds. We're going to have a member outing to find bluebirds for people. And let me mention the woodcock. The timber doodle. Now's the time.
The timber doodle.
Now they're doing their song and dance.
Yeah,
and it's remarkable to watch.
What does it sound like, the song and dance?
Well, the
Rich is making a face. I don't think he agrees with that.
Well, Jim, let me say that if you were a timber doodle, you'd be in big trouble.
Now, what do you
think? You'd be a very lonesome timber
doodle. Rich, come on. You're so good at this. Go ahead.
Actually, it's somewhat similar to what Jim was doing. It's kind of like a soft eep, eep. And they come out at dusk, right
yep.
in the evening,
yep.
and they have this aerial dance that is remarkable to watch. Unfortunately, it happens as the light is receding, as dimming, and it gets harder and harder to watch towards the evening. But there they're up there. They fly these incredible heights, and then they drop in a parachute spiral tumble
Whoa.
Fashion.
And they tweet while they're coming down.
Their wings are
and
shaped so
media.
That the wind yeah. goes through the wings, causing this twittering sound. And they also have a little song that they do on the way down. And then they get down to the ground, and the show's not over. Then they do this little turkey trot where they step forward, and they strut, and they fan their tail, and they drop their wings, and they go, meep, meep, meep.
Yep.
So,
I
but my real question is about barred owls.
Oh, okay. Well, wait a minute. I'm still doing it. Okay, what do you got on the owls?
In the past 4 years, I have found six barred owls road-killed. And I'm just wondering, you know, how does this happen?
Here's a sad story about the barred owls. This time of year. I mentioned earlier that there's probably been a food shortage up north. We don't know the exact reason why, but there's been an influx of barred owls. The ones that get thrown out of the territory up north are the young, weak, or incapable, and they're forced out. So they show up in our backyard in a weakened condition, and unfortunately, they succumb. They're more vulnerable. They're more desperate in trying to find food. They take riskier chances. Why they, you know, we're just talking about the one that was feeding on the ground. So they're prone to this sort of mishap, and it's nature's way. You know, you can't
yeah.
if you can't hack it. You know, step aside.
Okay, I thought maybe it was like you know the way their flight pattern at night, and they see headlights and dive into them or
well,
something?
Well, usually what it is that they're very opportunistic, and they see a rodent crossing the road, and they want to get down to it before the other predator gets to it, and it happens to be a big truck.
Yeah.
And they're very poor judgment of relative speed. So they don't get it that car is moving very fast, and they're not going to have time to get out of the way. A lot of birds are like that. A lot of birds, like the crows, know what to do. They,
yeah,
know, they'll step out of the way of a fast-moving car and then walk right back again to that raccoon carcass.
Thank
yeah.
you very much, Jim. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah,
all right.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Albany Institute of History and Art, presenting the making of the Hudson River School, More Than the Eye Beholds, now through August 19th, albanyinstitute.org. Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, a community-owned natural grocery store dedicated to sustainable agriculture, the local economy, and the environment, berkshire.coop. Capcom Federal Credit Union, offering home mortgages, auto loans, checking, financial planning, and more, capcomfcu.org. Curtis Lumber, providing kitchens, baths, doors, windows, paint, flooring, and more since 1890, with 21 locations in New York and Northern Vermont. CurtisLumber.com. And Cafe Capriccio, offering private catering for groups of 10 to 40 and escorted tours to Tuscany. Locations in Albany and Saratoga Springs, CafeCapriccio.com for reservations.
And we are back, and we're having a terrific time here with a real genius when it comes to birds and almost everything else, Rich Guthrie. And so,
I have my limits.
And so, Rich, let's get back to the phones and try to get everybody in if we can here. Let's go to Ann in Stockbridge. Ann, you're on.
Hi. I just wanted to find out. I've seen two bald eagles regularly now in Stockbridge, and I'm just wondering, I always thought they were very rare, and I know they've come back a bit, but is this common knowledge that we have a lot around here?
Well, a lot is relative, but yes, compared to the old days, not that long ago, a decade and a half ago, eagles were rare, but now they've made a very strong comeback, and it's not
so
unusual.
Exciting.
Oh, it is. Oh, listen,
yeah.
I think it's terrific, and congratulations.
And they stay in the same place. Every night around 5, they're in this spot.
Well, it's a good likelihood that is a nesting pair.
Now, about hunting. Awesome. About hunting. You know, we've got Murray the dog. He's white.
Oh, yeah.
He's, you know, about 20 pounds, 22
mm-hmm.
pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Can any of these raptors hurt my dog?
No. No.
Okay, somebody told me that they would go after small pets.
Nah, the bald eagle is mainly a fish eater or a dead critter eater.
Okay, and then I just want to mention that I was building a house, and the house was still open, but the windows were in, and there was a hummingbird at the window who was couldn't get out, and it was just sort of flapping its wings at a double-hung window, and there were three windows next to each other. So I went over, I was with a friend, and I put my fingers out on top of the bottom, you know, the lower window of the double-hung, and he was going to open up the next window so that we could release him, and the hummingbird landed right on my fingers.
Wow.
And just sat there.
Wow.
And then my friend opened the window, and I cupped the hummingbird and released him. And
wonderful.
It was just the coolest thing.
Well, you bet.
Yeah, so their birds are amazing.
From hummingbirds to eagles, you covered the wide gamut there, range.
And good luck out on seeing bluebirds.
I'm going to hope for it. Maybe why I'm so unhappy, because I never saw that one of happiness.
We'll make bluebirds happy.
Thanks, Anne.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
And in our backyard, we have Ben the bear. We share the bear. He goes around. He makes pretzels out of all of our bird feeders.
Yeah,
and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Be very, very careful with bears. Bears do not mess with them.
I'm not messing with them.
No, even keeping the bird feeders out. Take them in at night. Don't let the bears become accustomed to finding food around your house. Murray will be in big trouble if he
with a bear.
Yeah, with the bear around.
I think Murray knows better.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Thanks a lot. Let's go to Chris in Scotia. Chris, you're on.
Hello, wonderful call, a wonderful show, and I enjoy this man tremendously. But my question is this. I'm a state licensed guide, and I spent a lot of time in the woods. And the last two springs in an area in Charlton, I've been observing a bird that I know as a child, because I used to watch them in my house in Poughkeepsie, as being a northern shrike, because I've seen them bring small rodents up and dismember them right in front of me as I'm sitting turkey hunting. And the gentleman I took out last year called me up like a week ago and, to prove me wrong, told me, Chris, there are no northern shrikes anymore in New York State. And I did a little research on my own, and apparently they're in great decline. So am I having a hallucination, or are they still here?
Nope. You're right. You're good. And he's right, but only partly right. And that is that the northern shrike, it does in fact occur in New York State. No problem. They're not common, but they do occur. It's the loggerhead shrike that has disappeared from New York. The other species that used to come up and nest in New York State no longer.
What is that, shrike? Is that
shrike, S-H-R-I-K-E. Remarkable birds. They are a songbird that has evolved into predatory ways. And so they'll fly around. They will catch a mouse or a bird, and since their feet, the theory has it that their feet are so weak they can't hold on to it like a hawk or an owl can. So they bring it over to a thorn bush or a barbed wire fence and impale it there.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they call them the butcher bird. Listen, I think, you know, life is tough out there. And these guys have figured a new angle. And they got it. You know, that's what it's all about, is making,
evolution.
Making it through.
Yeah.
And these guys yeah, go ahead.
One further question. Are they a migratory bird, or will I see them all year long?
No. The northern shrike, the migrant, is definitely a migratory bird. They'll be heading back north, well up into Canada, Labrador, Hudson Bay, any day now. And the loggerhead shrike used to fly up here during the summertime and nest. And I'm with you there. I used to see them down in Poughkeepsie back in the day, but they are virtually gone. They might be up in the St. Lawrence River Valley, up by Messina and Ogdensburg. If they should ever occur around here, let us know, because we are keeping an eye out for them.
Where I see them is up in Charlton in an old apple orchard for the last 2 years straight.
Okay. Well, that's what they like. They like apple orchards and open shrubby fields, and that's how they make their living.
That's the first call we've had about the shrike today.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
I hope it's not the last.
You know what that would make it? Shrike one.
Oh, boy. Oh.
Okay.
I knew I shouldn't have asked.
Let's go to Susan in Rhinebeck. Susan, you're on.
Hello. Thank you so much for taking my phone call. My question is regarding a hawk that has discovered my feeding patch
and I lost my first, well, took the first bird January 1st, and now it's coming back on a regular basis. This morning it had a red-winged blackbird around 8:30. So my question is whether this is temporary and it's going to stop once the food starts to come back for them, or if now this is going to be pretty regular.
Well, it sounds like he found a good deal there. And you're operating a feeding patch, but the invited guests might not be what you had in mind. A hawk is looking for a meal, and you're
right.
Providing him with a menu beyond his wildest dreams. So there's a few things that you could do. Top of the list is nothing. So.
That's what I was wondering, if I should stop, feeding them. Because it's the food for squirrels, too, and I have very tall coniferous trees, and the hawk comes, flies into the trees and waits, and then sometimes gives up and flies away. But this morning it was more in an open area, and I could hear the commotion.
And it's hawks are birds.
Listen, Susan, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, very quickly, Patrick Donges, what do you got?
Yes, hi, Alan. We have Polly on Facebook says, I was on Cape Cod earlier this month and came across the body of a razorbill on the beach. Isn't that way south for a razorbill?
No. Cape Cod is not too far south. In fact, razorbills are a type of bird that resembles a penguin. They're northern counterparts of penguins.
Wow.
But they can fly. And this year, there's been a phenomenal flight of razorbills, usually an Arctic bird, a northern Atlantic bird, all the way down to Florida, around the tip of Key West, up into the Gulf Coast. Phenomenal. Who knows why? It's a scary mystery. The real reason may be scary.
Okay, too.
All right. And the last one, Pamela on Facebook says, I'd like to know more about the family life of cardinals and grackles and their lifestyles. I've usually got a pair of cardinals in my yard, but on rare occasions have I seen three or four pair there at once.
Go check out the books written by Arthur Cleveland Bent, B-E-N-T, The Life History of North American Songbirds.
All right.
That's a good resource, lots of information. Everything you want to know, it's in there.
Great. Thanks.
Great. And thank you, Patrick. And let's go to Kyle on line number 5 here. Kyle, you're on the road. Go ahead.
Hi, how's it going? I just wanted to ask, is it rare to see black vultures in this area?
Not anymore.
I saw some and I looked it up and online it said that they weren't in this area.
Yep, that's old news. They're now here. Just like the cardinal and the mockingbird and the Carolina wren, these southern birds have pushed north over the last few decades, and the black vulture is part of that parade.
You think that's global warming?
It's something.
We saw a black vulture on top of our neighbor Ron and Kate's house. And
okay.
We were astounded by it. We never saw it again.
Okay. Well, you will again.
And one other quick comment. Have you ever witnessed the flock of crows down by the Mid-Hudson Bridge in Poughkeepsie?
I used to live down there, and I used to enjoy their flights as they flew across.
Oh, okay. I was wondering. It's amazing.
Yes.
Why is it amazing, Rich?
Oh, it's just dramatic. I mean, these flights of crows coming into their nightly roost, only during the wintertime. Then they'll disperse. Don't worry about it.
Sort of like Alfred Hitchcock?
Right.
Well, no.
No.
This is real.
Thousands.
This is real, and it's legitimate.
Well, that's what I meant.
Yeah, well, his is not.
technically you're right, but that's what the movie was about.
I know, but it's
don't break
that
my
was so
stones.
Far. That
okay.
was that was. I try to resist comparing it to that movie because this is real. It's delightful to watch.
Okay,
not a scary.
Gotcha. You got me on a technicality.
All right,
okay.
All right.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. And let's go to Neil in New York. Go ahead, Neil.
Hey, Rich. Love the show.
Thank you.
I had the thrill of my life yesterday. I saw a sandhill crane in northern Rensselaer County by Johnsonville.
Excellent.
And I knew there was a pair hanging out in Colony for the winter, but
yep.
Do you know anything about them moving back into the Northeast? Is this something that we can look forward to moving forward?
Good question, and the answer is yes. The sandhill crane is a remarkable tall bird that has an incredible courtship behavior, delight to watch. They're typically of the Manitoba, Saskatchewan area of the North America, and also a population that is resident in Florida. They have made some return to New York State. They're nesting out in Montezuma area west of Syracuse. There have been an increasing number of sightings, and I expect that there will be a successful pair nesting someplace in our area in the not-too-distant future. It's just the trend is going in that direction.
Super. Well, I reported it on eBird, so.
Hey, way to go.
Way to go, Neil. Thank you very much for your call.
And thank you.
We have time for one or two more. We have only one on the line, so 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Henry in Connecticut. Henry.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. One comment and one question. Bluebirds, I have a heated bird bath on my deck. I'm northern Connecticut, right near Massachusetts, where it gets very cold. In fact, we just had 31 inches of snow.
Ow.
And, yes, it broke a kind of record here, this last snowstorm.
31 inches? I live in Great Barrington. I didn't think 31 inches.
Staffordville, Connecticut, at 31 inches.
Wow. You're the lucky man.
Yes.
Or not.
And it was very heavy snow.
Ooh.
And, but I had my heated bird bath out for years, and usually every year, January, February, in fact, last week they came. There's four or five bluebirds that come in the morning, or usually in the morning, and line up and drink water. And it's the most beautiful thing to see because they're such beautiful little birds.
Oh, especially in a bright sunny day with a snowy background.
Honestly, I just love to see them.
Yeah.
And another question is, about maybe 3 weeks ago, I had a yellow-bellied sapsucker come, which I've been feeding the birds for 30 years, and I have never seen a yellow-bellied sapsucker. And he's an absolutely beautiful bird with the red on top and the red under his neck. And he stayed about 1 week, and then he's gone.
But okay, Henry, I got to stop you because Rich is almost out of time here. So, Rich, you want to comment on the sapsucker?
I will. Sapsuckers are a type of woodpecker.
Yes.
That,
it's a beauty.
Yeah,
Rich
it is.
Is showing me. If you're watching it on streaming right now, you'll see Rich holding up the yellow-bellied sapsucker.
It's a type of woodpecker that taps the tree and draws the sap, just like we do with maple syrup.
Yeah.
And they learned that, usually they're gone through the winter months. But they do like to come around early in the spring when the sap starts flowing because it's a nutritious meal. And then they come back later on, and any insects or flies or ants that are drawn to the sweet sap, that's their dessert.
Okay, Henry, you had your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes. Let's go to Karen very quickly. Karen, you only got a minute. Go.
Hi. I just wanted to let all the bird lovers out there know about an opportunity to see a film called People of a Feather. It's happening at Project Native's Film Festival coming up on April 7th, and it's about the plight of the eider duck up in the Canadian Arctic and the issues
Whoa.
Of change up there that are causing causing death to the eider ducks. So it's an important documentary, and I think some of your listeners will like it.
Okay, Karen, very quickly, how do you get to find out about it?
You could go to projectnative.org to find out more about the Free Film Festival.
Okay, I'm going to look into it. It sounds fascinating.
Thanks, Karen. Appreciate it.
Okay. You're welcome. Thank you. Yeah.
Projectnative.org.
Okay, you got a half a minute, Jack.
Yeah, hey, I was wondering if you had any different feelings on the rights of pigeons versus beautiful birds in nature, because I was thinking for a while about making pterodactyl costumes for pigeons in the city. And
okay,
I was wondering.
Okay,
if,
hey, Jack, I'm sorry, you're out of time. Rich, you want to answer?
Pigeons are here to stay, and they're remarkable birds to observe. I know a lot of kids learn about birds through the studying pigeons, and Cornell has a wonderful project to help them along with that. Cornell University's Laboratory of Ornithology.
Project Pigeon.
Something,
Pigeon Watch or something. I made it up.
I know, okay, I can tell, but I'm trying to come up with the real name for it.
Thank,
I can't.
Thank you, Rich. We are just out of time. I want to thank everybody who called in today. Support for the Vox Pop comes from the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting Pastoral and Parkland, American landscape paintings with works by George Innes. Woodslow Homer, Albert Bierstadt, and more. ArkellMuseum.org and the Dam Cafe and Deli, Saugerties, New York, serving breakfast and lunch with chef-created soups, salads, vegetarian options, and homemade desserts. Catering services available at thedamcafeandeli.com. And Bethel Wood Center for the Arts, presenting the vocal group Celtic Woman, performing Irish tunes, pop songs, You Lift Me Up, and Orinoco Flow. Saturday, June 15th at 8 p.m., BethelWoodCenter.org, the Birch School, Orange County, a new independent day school and and Center for Homeschool Classes working to provide a child-centered, nature-based learning community for ages 4 to 17, thebirchschool.org. And thanks again, everybody, for joining us this afternoon. Our wonderful Rich Guthrie, always doing all of this work for us, and we love him for it. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Thanks to our intern, Matt Don Diego, otherwise known as Zorro, for answering the phones. Our producer is Patrick Donges. I'm Alan Chartok. Moyers and Company tomorrow on Medical Monday next week. Mental health and addiction issues with Dr. Jennifer Michaels. Stay tuned now for a news update. And before we go, do you want to give us just one bird call, Rich Guthrie?
Hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo.
Is that a dove?
No, that's the owl. We're talking barred owls.
I got to tell you, I love doves. Okay, bye, everybody.